session. Clerk, call the roll, please, Carol.
Senator Gay, Senator Frye.
Aye.
Senator Simmons, Senator Otto.
Aye.
Senator Cohen.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay. So much paper here. Now, let us take up 341, which is, will be a new bill, so we'll have the people who are here to offer amendments from the Department of Transportation. And for the record, I did have a communication from Mr. Kalinowski before he went off to another hearing to say that he does believe that your amendments are necessary and appropriate, or something like that. Not having seen the amendments, that the issue needs to be dealt with, and so if you come forth, Pat Schwartz.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Pat Schwartz, Assistant State Highway Engineer for Operations. The proposed amendment to the Senate Bill 341 that we're offering.
Can I stop you just a minute? We do have LC draft amendments prepared in your files. I think. Let's make sure we locate them before you go ahead so we know what we're looking at.
I didn't see them.
From the Highway Division. It is the Highway Division.
Okay.
Senator Frye, do you have?
Yes.
Okay, they're there. Go ahead, please.
Also, probably the first thing we should do, as the Highway Division would like to thank this committee for considering our amendment to Senate Bill 341. We realize it's late in the session, but we've recently become aware of a problem that we think needs to be dealt with, and therefore we've proposed this amendment. The amendment would allow any public contracting agency by administrative rule, by resolution or ordinance, or other regulation to require mandatory pre-qualification of those who propose to furnish bid, performance, or payment bonds on public contracts. The Oregon Highway Division performs more contract work than any other agency of state government. We require bid bonds, performance bonds, and payment bonds on all of our contracts to ensure that our projects will be contracted as bid, that the work will be completed, and that all bills of the contractor will be paid upon completion of the work. These requirements have been imposed on our contracts to protect the public, the agency, and the suppliers and subcontractors who supply materials or who provide materials, supplies, and services to our contracts. The Highway Division has recently discovered that our surety bond requirements are not necessarily providing the protection that we had believed they were. We have had the recent experience of one of our contractors failing to perform the work he had bid and found that his surety is in receivership and trying to reorganize. We are also aware of a recent small State Parks Division contract where a similar experience occurred. On checking with the State Insurance Commissioner's office, we found that the only requirement to be licensed as a surety in the state of Oregon is to file a statement of assets totaling $1 million and depositing $25,000 with the state treasurer. No limitation is imposed on the dollar volume of work that can be bonded. It is not our intention to request any changes to the laws or rules governing the surety business in the state of Oregon. What we are requesting is the authority for public contracting agencies to screen by pre-qualification those surety companies who would be authorized to provide bond, to provide surety bonds on public contracts in the state of Oregon. What we are proposing is not, in this amendment to Senate Bill 341, is not without precedent in other public contracting agencies. Two that I am aware of are the United States government and the state of California. The U.S. Treasury Department publishes in the Federal Register on July 1st of each year a complete list of those companies authorized to issue surety bonds on federal contracts, together with the total underwriting limitation of the company. The Oregon Highway Division respectfully solicits your support for this measure. And Madam Chair, sitting on my left is Mr. Arthur Eby, President of the Surety Association of Oregon, who came with us here today and would like to tell you a little bit about the condition of the surety business in the state of Oregon and some of their experiences.
Okay, we have to do that.
Yes, Madam Chair, pardon?
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Arthur R. Eby, E-B-Y. I'm the regional bond manager for Wausau Insurance Companies and chairman of, I mean, president of the Surety Association of Oregon this year. The two cases that the highway department mentions are good examples of why the state should be able to protect themselves and require some pre-qualification of the surety companies. There are a number of specialty surety companies that started up that are writing a lot of bonds and have very small pre-qualification requirements on the treasury list. And the one on the park department, the company that had $1 million of that bond only had a treasury limit of $342,000. And the other company that had about $400,000 of the contract only had about an $86,000 treasury limit. So there wasn't adequate protection there for the park department, and I think the park department has lost a lot of money because the surety cannot perform. Being in the private sector most of my adult life, I don't like to see too much regulations on private industry. However, as a taxpayer, I would sure like to see our tax dollars properly protected with the bonds that the state code requires. And I was really amazed to find out that the state did not have any authority to refuse to accept a bond from a surety that might be on a bond that's more than their total assets. And there should be some way of the state protecting themselves for particularly the specialty markets that are starting up and writing large bonds with a very small net worth. And with this economy, there's been a lot of contractors going broke, and there's been a lot of sureties and insurance companies going broke. You can't legislate against companies going broke, but at least if they're in trouble, you should be able to refuse to accept bonds from them.
Okay, so we're talking about the surety bond companies that are bonding, that are bonding the contractors.
That's right.
So in fact, you're not really doing a favor to the contractors either you would be doing a favor for the contractors in a sense, making sure that the people that they buy do the business with aren't wholly intact and
right.
And are able to perform, if you will, on the bond.
One of the things that happened is that the specialty market starting up will let contractors take on more work than they're really qualified to do. And so this creates problems in contractors. There's too many contractors have been failing on the basis. And of course, the more they go broke, then the specialty markets are going broke also, the jury market.
Okay. Would you like to, as a lawyer, lead us through this? We just allow pre-qualification, that's it, right, Jack?
Madam Chairman, for the record, I'm Jack Solis, Assistant Attorney General. The language here is very similar to the pre-qualification language for pre-qualifying contractors for public contracts.
Thanks.
And it allows the agency to adopt a rule, or in the case of local government resolution ordinance, requiring mandatory pre-qualifications and setting up what the requirements are. Mr. Eby has volunteered to help us on this and bring people in from the private sector to help us adopt the rules and give us the guidelines that they feel will be most effective. And the highway division, once that is done, of course, has a program of cooperating with cities and counties, and we will distribute this information throughout the state so that they won't have to work up a lot of this from the ground up themselves. They can sort of crib off of ours. And this gives the agency the ability to disqualify somebody that's been pre-qualified if they find out that they're in financial trouble.
Okay. So Senator Frye, you have a chance to look at these?
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Day, we are looking at the
I got it.
Highway Division replacement, if you will, and the Senator Otto.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the amendments to Senate Bill 341, identified as SB 341-2, dated 5/8/85.
Okay, I would say though that we're not, I want to make sure that these in fact got the bill and are not just additions.
Yeah, it gets the bill.
Huh?
It gets the bill.
Yeah, section one, it does. Section two is it.
You want to adopt the amendments and then take a peek at it Tuesday?
Fine. I'm happy to adopt the amendments. I just want to, I don't have it laid out and I just want to make sure that we aren't.
No, what you see is what you get.
All right, that's fine.
Are there objections? So ordered. Shall we move the bill?
Yeah,
yes, sure.
And I do want to say for the record that I did have a communication from Mr. Kalinowski that he thinks that something like this is in order.
Madam Chair, move Senate Bill 341 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Otto moves amended 341-2, are the amendments that we adopted dated 5/81 as it's amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Day.
With that, Senator Otto is giving the discretion of the chair to review the amendments prior to submission to the desk. If there's any problem, you have a right to bring it back. Isn't that right, Senator Otto?
No problem.
Okay. Call the roll, please, Carol.
Senator Day.
Aye.
Senator Frye.
Aye.
Senator Simmons. Senator Otto.
Aye.
Senator Day.
Aye. Good. And I guess all these letters that we have in here in opposition, the people should be, for the record, understood that the bill is substantially different and deals totally with a not unrelated but similar problem. So now let us see. We have. Senator Otto is here.
Senator
Otto. We can talk about there are people here. Well, Paul Romain is here. We've got Hospital 2284, I know, is here. That's the the brew pub issue we've had up before. Take a look at that one. We actually have amendments that were submitted in the IRS. And these 2284-2, we have A-2, which are from Tom Mason's office. We have A-3 from the beer and wine distributors. I've had a communication, essentially what? Paul, do you want to come up and explain the distributors' amendments just briefly?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Romain. I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. Our proposed amendments to House Bill 2284A engrossed are designed to do what we believe the bill was originally intended to do, which was to create a different license, allow an industry that's beginning in the state of Oregon to possibly experiment a little bit and take off. We really have no interest in this bill in their particular industry, except that we want to make sure that it doesn't sort of bite off more than we were told it was going to bite off. Presently, there's what's called in beer distribution a three-tier system where you have a wholesaler, you have a manufacturer, you have a retailer. What this does is go beyond that and allows a brewer to have a retail establishment. That's okay with us, as long as that brewer doesn't also wholesale it, the product, so they can't control the whole marketing of it, all the way from the brewery on up to the retail level. With that in mind, our license, our amendments would allow them to brew, transport, sell the wholesale malt beverage and wine licensees, and export their product. It would not make them eligible for another brewery license or a wholesaler license. It would allow them to hang on to a retail malt beverage and wine license, so they could keep that retail establishment. It would allow them to have their brew pub sell their product at their brewery premise or off-premise. And that's basically all it would do. It would still keep the gallonage requirements. Our association gets very nervous, even though it's a very small industry out there. We get very nervous when people start trying to get more privileges than those of us in the industry are really entitled to. That's what the bill is designed, or the amendments are designed to do.
Madam Chair.
Senator Otto.
I'd move that we postpone indefinitely action on House Bill 2284.
Hmm.
Question.
Postpone indefinitely means we can't ever bring it up, right?
Right.
That's personal motion.
Isn't that what it means?
That's what it means.
That's what it means.
I'd rather have had a table motion, but...
This, then, is a true usu. Out of sight, out of mind.
Well, I'm not sure that I want to do all of that far, but I do think that needs to, we need to, you wouldn't reconsider for a table.
Not really.
Okay. Call the roll.
Senator Day.
Aye.
Senator Frye?
Aye.
Senator Simmons? Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Here,
thank you.
I guess you didn't adopt my amendments.
You didn't
amend
this.
Senate Bill 5. We have people from, let's take up 901, and that is the bill for the ports, and do you have any amendments offered to 901? Did you get any communications from our providers? Yeah. Sandville 901 is the assessment district issue. I've done some checking to find out that it's not something that I'm particularly enamored with. I think the ports probably ought to have the opportunity. I'm concerned about the the conservation districts, except that I think it's very narrowly construed, and the people who buy those bonds probably going to look toward, or those kind of assessment issues are going to look toward their risky, and I don't think there's a chance to really do much damage except to the people who are going to buy them and they're going to look at them, but. I don't know how the committee feels about that, Senator. I'll need to do a little check here.
I'm not enthusiastic. Other people are. I go along with it, but I'm not all that eager.
I'm not going to live or die over it.
Okay, well, let's wait and see what things are. We'll hold it a while and see where we are.
I'm not enthusiastic.
Okay. It does expand the authority considerably for us. Bond themselves into debt.
I know what our absent members' feeling would be.
Yes, our absent member. Yes, our absent member would be not inclined. Okay, that one.
we're just holding it.
Yeah, we'll just hold it. Let's see where we are with it. Hold it in advance. We have, I know that there's Senate Bill 756 and 757 are up today, and Senator Fry has...
Our absent members.
Our absent members here. I have a concern with 757 in the sense of changing of the days. If you want to take up 757 first. I couldn't support it if it has with the amendments on page 6, line 8, if I would have at a minimum move to delete 180 and return it to 120, 757. We do not have amendments to the bill. Senator Fry has concerns about the bills, I know. My concern is with the 180 days.
That's one of my concerns, too. That's not my only concern. Senator Simmons and I were the only ones here who listened to the testimony in those two bills. I regret that the other committee members couldn't.
I wasn't here, yeah. What's the problem, Senator Fry?
Well, it's a... The problem is that...
Oh, I heard this. I was here with you. Yeah, I was here with Sam. Go ahead. What's the problem?
Well, looking at 757, for example, collection costs on page 3 means all of the following. I don't think there's any way for the consumer, when he enters into these contracts, to have any understanding whatsoever what this is going to end up ultimately possibly costing. And that's my concern.
Well, I'm not enthusiastic for this bill, Madam Chairman. Not at all.
Are you sure?
Yes, sir.
Well, Madam Chair, the consumer, it won't cost the consumer anything if he pays promptly. And the only time that you run into collections costs and attorney's fees is when the consumer decides for one reason or another that he's not going to pay, and then it becomes sometimes quite expensive to force payment or to make him pay if he has a legitimate reason for not paying. Most companies, of course, are very willing to grant an extension, but most of the collection costs, in my experience at least, come about when the consumer moves without leaving a forwarding address, and it becomes rather expensive in time and money then to find him and either retrieve the collateral or accept a payment.
Madam Chair.
Saturday.
I was here on the hearing of that bill, and I think what struck me a lot of the time was they really don't call across the bill. They really want to use their in-house attorneys for this, as I recall, the testimony. They want to use their in-house attorneys and then start charging back costs for this. And part of the business of doing loans, you build into your credit, is a cost that you're going to have collection costs. And it just looks to me like a double dip. And secondly, I don't know how they're going to apportion cost from here. It looks like we're going to be paying the legal expense for the in-house attorneys of the banks. I mean, I think that's what's going to occur. And I just don't think it's a good idea, personally. I think that was a hard bill.
The costs are built in, of course, on a reasonable basis. But if one particular account requires an extraordinary amount of collection cost, it's a case of the individual who necessitates that cost paying, or all of the other consumers having to pay a higher rate in order to take care of the bad apple.
I guess I look on it, Senator Simmons, and Madam Chairman, that it's like self-service gas. I've got an office in Ontario, Idaho, and I go across and I have to pump my own gas and it costs more money. Sometimes the consumer doesn't receive the benefit of all our beneficial and benevolent lawmaking here, and so I guess I'm not sure that I would see the cost reduction to the average person getting commercial credit. On the other hand, I think what we see here is a way that they can start to amortize the cost of in-house lawyers. And I don't know, I just, the notion strikes me kind of, I mean, I just, that notion doesn't bother me, that's all.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Well, I didn't want to make any long speech because you folks didn't, most of you didn't hear all the testimony, but I can tell you right now that what might now be a half a day district court case in a collection matter is going to turn into a 2 day case, because if I were an attorney representing a debtor and the creditor came in and made all these claims about to make up this term of collection charges, I would go into some real deep, deep, extensive cross-examination and make them prove all of these items here, reasonable out-of-pocket cost. And who says it's reasonable? I mean, the bank, I guess, says it's reasonable. What part of the wages of the secretary in the bank that's working on this is subject to subsection B, salary, wages, commissions, and benefits, paid by the seller or the seller's assignee? Attorney fees. I mean, we heard somebody in here mention, I guess, some lawyers. I don't know if all the bank's lawyers get this much money, but we know that places like Portland, the lawyers' fees are $100, $125, $150 an hour. I just don't think that the public ought to be subjected to that kind of inexactitude when it comes to entering into a loan agreement. The guy on the street just does not know what he's getting into when he signs one of these agreements, if this is the law. And if not always, somebody doesn't want to pay, it's, you know, once in a while some people can't pay. So, I don't think it's fair.
Further comments?
I move to table, Mr. Chair.
Senator Frye moves to table Senate Bill 757. Call the roll, please.
Senator Day?
No.
Senator Frye?
Aye.
Senator Simmons?
No.
Senator
Otto? No. Motion failed.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day?
Aye.
I want to think for a while. I'd like to move on to some other bill.
Is any of the sponsors of that bill here to be delayed action on? Who are they?
Oh, that was Timms and Houck.
Yeah, Timms or Houck?
775.
Yep. 775. Pardon?
Did you have a question for people here?
No, he asked.
No, I asked if any of the sponsors of 775 were here. Houck, Timms.
You did. We left a message at Senator Timms' office.
Okay. Well, which bill should we go to here? I'm going to go to Senate Bill 637. Well, we'll let the chairperson make the choice.
What about 756?
756, okay.
What did you do with this one? I get it.
I moved away from the
conference.
No.
Oh, you're coming. Oh, okay.
Senator Frye moved to table. There were not enough votes to table. So, going through our deck to see what we should consider next.
All right. And
what was it, 756?
756, we may as well take up two and see where we are with that. I have may or may not have problems with this. This is attorney fees. Is this the same issue?
No.
Okay.
Different issue.
Different issue. I'm sorry, I missed both of these hearings.
Well, that's not entirely right. It does include one of the issues, I think, that was contained in 757.
Yes, you're right, Senator Frye. I beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
Term collection costs is here with us again.
Okay. 757, I don't want one. This is primarily mortgage securities, isn't it? It's mortgages and collateral.
I know I did not hear the
That's the one I think only Senator Simmons and I were here on.
725 is the Consumer Finance Act.
756?
756, sorry. Oh, 725 is the Consumer Finance Act.
Anyway, Madam Chair, I have the same problem with the over breadth of the term collection costs. It does two things. Well, again, I don't know, and no consumer would ever know by looking at this statute here or looking at a contract without determining what is included in collection costs. So it's a trap for the unwary, number one. And number two, it would allow for